On this edition, Anita Morjani talks about her journey from cancer to near death to true healing. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing is a New York Times best-selling book. In this truly inspirational memoir, author Anita Morjani relates how, after fighting cancer for almost 4 years, her body, overwhelmed by the malignant cells spreading throughout her system, began shutting down. As her organs failed, she entered into an extraordinary near-death experience where she realized her inherent worth and the actual cause of her disease. Upon regaining consciousness, Anita found that her condition had improved so rapidly that she was able to be released from the hospital within weeks without a trace of cancer in her body. As part of a traditional Hindu family residing in a largely Chinese and British society, she'd been pushed and pulled by culture and religious customs since she'd been a little girl, and after years of struggling to forge her own path while trying to meet everyone else's expectations, she had the realization, as a result of her epiphany on the other side, that she had the power to heal herself, and that there are miracles in the universe that she'd never even imagined. Well, as a result of her near-death experience, Anita is often invited to speak at conferences and events around the globe to share her insights. She's also a frequent guest at the University of Hong Kong's Department of Behavioral Sciences, speaking on topics such as dealing with terminal illness, facing death, and the psychology of spiritual beliefs. She is the embodiment of the truth that we have all the inner power and wisdom to overcome even life's most adverse situations, as she's a living proof of this possibility. Anita currently lives in Hong Kong with her husband, and when she's not traveling and speaking at conferences, she works as an intercultural consultant for multinational corporations based in the city. It's a joy to have her on the program, and she's joining us today from Palo Alto, California. Anita, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me to the show.
Well, it was such a joy. Your book, Dying to Be Me, is one that has spoken to so many around the world and certainly to myself. To start off, what I find interesting is your background. I mean, what an interesting mixture of cultures you had around you. Your parents were of Indian descent, yet you didn't grow up in India, but rather in Hong Kong, a British colony mostly occupied by Chinese, and in fact, your nanny was Chinese. You also talk about your schooling, the challenges and gifts you encountered as a Hindu attending a Catholic school. And early in your book, I think you said that your childhood was a mixture of East and West. I mean, what a gift for you to have been exposed to this variety of cultural backgrounds at such a young age.
I know, looking back on it now, I'm so grateful for that background and for the way I grew up, because at the time I had no idea, of course, that it was such a gift, because, you know, I didn't know that other kids feel differently, and I didn't know that other kids normally grow up around their own culture and they're not exposed to so many different cultures.
You know, something that stands out to me, I think it's in the first chapter, and something you struggled with as you began to mature, is the concept of gender inequality in arranged marriages. This was something that you did not embrace, and it would seem were very affected by. Can you talk a little bit about how this made you feel, being a female in a culture that clearly elevated males in value?
Yeah, that was actually pretty challenging for me, because I was always made to feel that as a female, I was expected to embrace housework, and that's not something I really enjoyed doing. I mean, I knew that housework had to be done, but I was expected to embrace it as a priority over having a career or going out and finding exciting things to do. And that's something that I found very, very difficult. And I couldn't understand why men in our culture were not expected to do the same. It was all right for a man to go traveling and having a great adventure, but for a woman, it was frowned upon. And even going off alone, like traveling alone, mm-hmm. that was very much also something that was frowned upon, and it really, really made me feel somehow like restrained and limited. And it was, the feeling was like, if I did it, if I defied our culture and did it, I felt like I was doing something wrong. So on the one hand, it didn't feel right to do it and defy our culture, and it didn't feel right to embrace what our culture wanted me to embrace. So it was like I was caught between a rock and a hard place.
Did you find you were alone in that, or did a lot of your female friends also feel the same way?
For the most part, I felt quite alone in that, at least amongst my Indian girlfriends. I had Western girlfriends, and I couldn't understand why in their culture they were allowed to do that. I mean, even saying they were allowed is an understatement. It was like they were more encouraged to express themselves, whereas in my culture, we were restrained. But most of my Indian girlfriends were really happy at the thought of getting married at the age of 19, 20, 21, and it appealed to them. And for some reason, it didn't appeal to me. I wanted to go out and see the world, because in our culture, getting married meant staying home and being a homemaker.
Yeah. Early in this compelling book, you talk about the exposure you had to a broad range of religious and spiritual traditions and some of the struggles with fitting in among the peers that were of different faiths. You talk about never really feeling like you belonged. You've kind of alluded to that already. Yet feeling a yearning to be more like those who went to school with. Yet as you were out to find out in your journey, all this exposure just barely touched the surface of what was yet to come. I think it was page 22 that you write, "Little did I know that all my previously held beliefs, perceptions, and philosophies were going to be blown wide open and shaken to their very core." Powerful statement.
Yeah, I had no idea what was in store for me. Oh, I was just going to say, if someone had told me beforehand, like when I was young, that this is what's going to happen, I think I would have been very frightened at the idea. And yet now, looking back at it, I think all of it was the best gift I could ever have had.
Well, I would imagine we talked about the gender inequality and how challenging that was, but also the belief systems too. You probably intuitively knew that you were unique, and that's part of your journey. We'll talk a little bit more about that too. But again, with all the spiritual traditions that you grew up with, that had to be a challenge.
Yeah, it was a challenge. And I did always feel different. And I did feel, yes, I guess, unique, yes.
Mm-hmm. In the chapter where you talk about your true love, Danny, it's clear that you were still struggling with your father's expectations for you to marry rather than embrace a career. You also talk about how, as one who backed out of an arranged marriage, a cultural no-no, of course, that you were worried that Danny might not want to marry you when he found out about this, yet your fears were unfounded, as you soon found out that Danny already knew. Can you talk a lot about your relationship with Danny and how important it's been for you as you went through this journey of yours?
Oh, Danny's been absolutely amazing through the whole journey. The way that he cared for me when I had cancer,
yes,
it was just incredible. Like when doctors told him that I only had a few months to live, and he just stopped working. Like slowly over the months, as I got sicker and sicker, he was going into work less and less, and he reached a point where he just stopped going into work altogether. And I remember I became so completely dependent on him. It was like, he knew everything, you know, like everything that I needed. I was so sick. I mean, I couldn't walk. My muscles were all wasted away. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even lift my head up. My neck was so weak. And I was like a skeleton. And I had open skin lesions, and my lungs were filled with fluid, and I was coughing all the time. And Danny was the only person that I really trusted to care for me. But the thing about him was that he never made me feel like he was doing it as an obligation or a duty. It was like that was where he wanted to be. Like that was all he wanted to do. And that's what really is amazing about him.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a hospice background, and my experience was when people are first told they don't have long to live, you know, everyone reacts differently. What was your reaction when you first heard that news?
Actually, they didn't tell me. Danny didn't tell me either.
Okay.
He told me after my NDE that of that specific time when I went, he told me about the time when I went to the doctor, you know, when we went to the doctor in December and when you had that scan, he told me that the doctor at that time said you had about 3 months to live.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really? And yeah, they didn't tell me. The doctor didn't tell me, and Danny didn't tell me.
Wow. So yeah. Danny held that by himself the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, and all I knew was that he just stayed by my side the whole time from there.
Yeah. My guest today is Anita Morjana. She's an intercultural consultant and now best-selling author. We're talking about her book, Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. I'm Richard Brendan. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to the program. It's a joy and honor to have Anita Morjana on today's program. We're talking about her book, Dying to Be Me. It's about her journey from cancer to near death to true healing. Anita, as you were diagnosed with cancer, which you term in the book a diagnosis of fear, you talk about trying to heal yourself through different holistic modalities. In fact, you went to India and spent some time there with a yoga master who helped you in your efforts to heal yourself. Can you talk about this journey through the different attempts at holistic healing and then share your thoughts on why these didn't ultimately heal the cancer?
Okay, well, there were times when I felt that these different modalities were helping. And like when I went to India, I had a really great yoga teacher who was helping me to heal, and I felt really, really good under this yoga teacher. I was doing yoga every morning and evening and following a fairly strict regime, like a strict diet, an Ayurvedic kind of diet.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher would keep telling me that there's no such thing as cancer. It's just a label, because every kind of disease and illness is just an imbalance in the body. And that felt really right to me. And so I was working with this teacher to get my body back into balance, and I started to feel really good again. But then when I started to feel good, then I flew back to my home country of Hong Kong, and many of my friends said, you know, that, oh, you look so much better. What have you been doing? And then I told them, oh, I've been doing Ayurveda. And they said, oh, but did you go for any treatments? Did you go and have scans done? I said, no. And they would say, oh, you're really crazy. And so I had this friend, a very, very close friend of mine, who had cancer, and she was having chemotherapy, and her situation was getting worse and worse, and she was deteriorating very, very dramatically. So people kept saying to me that you don't want what's happening to her to happen to you, so you better go and see a doctor. And I would say, but she's seeing a doctor, and this is what's happening
yeah.
to her.
Yeah.
You know, so I couldn't figure it. So then, because the fear started coming back, but I was not in India anymore, now I was in Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
I went for a different type of alternative. For me, the the chemotherapy path wasn't appealing because I was watching my friend deteriorate. She was on that path. So I went for Chinese traditional medicine, and so I started following that. But the interesting thing is, because it contradicts with Ayurveda, and I'd just been doing Ayurveda for the last 6 months, mm-hmm. I started to get really confused because I had already learned these things that I must not eat red meat, especially pork. And in Chinese traditional medicine, I was told I have to eat pork. Mm-hmm. And instead of being able to follow it, I started to get really fearful. I started to feel, oh my God, what am I doing to my body? And is mm-hmm. this helping or is it damaging it? And then I started to notice that my condition started to deteriorate again. You know, it was like, so then I would start researching and seeing, I would get on the internet and start reading up on different modalities because mm-hmm. I wanted clarity, because Ayurveda clashed with Chinese traditional medicine. Mm-hmm. And the more I researched on the internet, the more I found everything contradicted, everything I was researching contradicted other things. And that's what I find, is the more you research, the more you find things contradict each other.
That seems to be a theme for you in your life, isn't it? Spiritualities contradict one another, beliefs in gender equality contradicted one another, and even when you were trying to discover a healing modality.
Yes, and that does seem, absolutely, it seems to be a theme, and I think it is because I am exposed to all these different cultures in everything, whether it's in their traditional medicines or their culture or their religion or, you know, their beliefs. And it's, things are not confusing if you are immersed in one culture. If you're born and brought up and live within one culture, then there's no contradiction and no confusion because everybody around you believes the same thing.
In the section where you relay your near-death experience, Anita, you talk about being aware of what was going on around you in the hospital. In fact, you even talk about being able to hear conversations that were going on in another room while you were in a coma. Can you share a bit about this and how it felt to be fully aware of what was going on despite being on the verge of death?
Yeah, I didn't even realize I was in a coma because I was so aware of everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware of what all the doctors were doing, my family, that my family were around me. I was aware of what they were saying. But I was also aware of things they were saying outside the room, like quite a distance down the hallway. I was aware of what everybody was saying. And I didn't even realize they were outside the room because it was like my awareness was there. It was like my awareness was just expanding and expanding, and it was just everywhere. And the feeling was incredible. I felt like really light and free, and for the first time, I felt incredible clarity. I was no longer feeling fearful or confused. There was no more contradictions. It was like everything was just clear.
And it just naturally came on you.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A
it
wave.
Was like everything made sense. It mm-hmm. was like suddenly I understood everything. It just all made sense. It was like I had woken up.
Yes, when in fact you did, didn't you? Spiritually.
Yeah.
You also talk about what you described as a feeling of unconditional love. You write in your book, the feeling of complete, pure, unconditional love was unlike anything I'd ever known before. Unqualified and non-judgmental, it was totally undiscriminating, as if I didn't have to do anything to deserve it, nor did I need to prove myself to earn it. Anita, what a beautiful feeling that must have been, experiencing
that. Oh, wow. It was just the most amazing experience. I mean, it was the first time I realized that I didn't have to work hard at being deserving, or, you know, that I didn't have to do anything to be more lovable or more spiritual or more deserving. I was just loved unconditionally. And it didn't matter what I had done in my life. I mean, I had always thought I was going to be punished really badly for running away from the arranged marriage. But,
sure.
But no, all I felt was just compassion.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Empathy, understanding. That's all.
Or even the judgment that many of us feel because we don't think we're, like, doing enough.
Yeah, there was no judgment at all. I mean, I had been the only judge during my life, and once I crossed into that realm, there was no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
There's no judgment outside of myself.
Mm-hmm. You have an opportunity to talk to a lot of people all around the world. As a matter of fact, as I'm interviewing you now, you're at a university in Northern California. Do you find this quote I just shared from your book, this feeling of unconditional love, that strikes a chord the most with so many people when they hear what you experienced?
Yes, that's actually, I think it brings a lot of relief for people, is that feeling that there is unconditional love waiting in the other realm.
Mm-hmm.
It brings relief not only for themselves, but for their family members and loved ones who have moved on.
Oh, yes.
And I think, yeah, a lot of people worry about their family members who have moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And when people have family members who have moved on, I want everybody to know that they've gone on to a better place. And not only that, it makes our loved ones happy if we, who are left behind here, if we actually do whatever we can to be happy. We're not supposed to mourn and be sad and depressed because they're gone.
Yes.
And we shouldn't feel guilty if we find happiness again. In fact, nothing makes them happier than for them to see us be happy.
Oh, we're bringing love to life today with Anita Morjana. She's an intercultural consultant, but also now a best-selling author. Her book is Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. I'm Richard Brendan. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings Magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings Magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's such a joy to have Anita Morjana on today's program. Her book really rocked my world, as it did so many. It was a New York Times bestseller, Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. Anita, you also talk about the concept of time and how everything really occurs simultaneously. This has been talked about by many authors who write about death. Can you describe what you mean by everything occurring simultaneously?
Yeah, what it felt like for me was that time and space both had no meaning in the other realm, in that it doesn't matter where anything was occurring or when it was occurring, but wherever I would put my awareness, that's where I would be. And so like I had my awareness on my brother, and immediately I was there. When I was in Hong Kong in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
my brother was in India. But as soon as I put my awareness on him, I was aware that he was frantically getting on a flight to come and see me. He wanted to reach me before I actually passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually recall thinking to myself that, oh, I have to hold on. I don't want to die before he gets here. And at the same time, I became aware of another lifetime that I had together with my brother, where I remember being very protective of him. And what's interesting is that normally it would be quite normal to interpret that as being maybe a past life that I've had with him.
Yes.
But it didn't feel like it was in the past. It felt like it was as clear as if it was happening right now, like simultaneously.
Ah.
And so, and everything that was happening, like even in the hospital and with my, I'm watching my family and myself dying and my brother flying to see me and then the other life with my brother, everything was as though it was all happening simultaneously. And now, like when I tell my story, when I write it, when I tell it, it's like I have to think about it to put it into linear time to make it make sense. But in that realm, it was there was no linear time. It was like it was all happening.
Oh, how beautiful. That's, yeah. You also talk, and we've kind of alluded to this with questions that people ask you, but you also talk about your deceased father and other loved ones who were there to reassure you while you were in this state. Can you tell us more about this experience?
Sure. My best friend who died of cancer, my father, and other deceased loved ones, they were all there. They just seemed to just be surrounding me and comforting me. My father especially, though, because during my, as you know, where, as I was growing up, my father had all these cultural expectations, like the gender disparity and also the arranged marriage. All that was, they were really my father's expectations for me to meet our cultural values. Mm-hmm. And he'd passed away 10 years prior to my experience, to that near-death experience. And when I and all these years, I'd always felt that I'd let him down because I'd never met his cultural expectations. But when I encountered him in the other realm, it was like all I felt from him was unconditional love. And I realized that that's all he has for me is unconditional love. But in physical life, we have you know, we have a physical body, but we also have a gender, a culture, a race, and these act as filters.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Yeah, in the other realm, where without our gender, our body, our race, our religion, our culture, and all that's left is just this pure essence. Mm. And this pure essence is just unconditional love, and that's all my father had for me. And I understood that when he was in physical life, he loved me in the only way he knew how, which was through his culture and you know, his what he had learned in his upbringing.
Yes.
It's the only way he knew how to love me. But underneath, all he had for me was unconditional love.
What a beautiful experience that was, especially concerning your father.
That was an amazing experience because I, after that experience, I loved him so much more after than during, than when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. In chapter 7, you have a realization during this experience that God is a state of being. Now, when you had this realization, you all of a sudden had a knowing of why you had cancer. Can you talk about this knowing and what you realized was the cause?
I completely understood in that state that I was that I am an amazing, magnificent being. We all are, and we don't realize it. We come into these physical bodies. We express ourselves through these physical bodies, and we feel limited, and we make ourselves small, and we forget. And I had forgotten, as we all do during the course of our lives, and I realized in that state the magnitude of, you know, of magnificence or power or universal energy or whatever that was available to me or to, and is available to all of us. And instead of expressing myself and being who I am and being proud to be who I am, I had turned it inwards and turned it against me, and it had manifested as cancer. Whereas we're supposed to express who we are fearlessly. That's why we come here. We're just supposed to be who we are and not be afraid to be who we are. And nothing more. There's nothing more expected of us. Our purpose really is just to be who we are and just express who we are.
Oh. And you also talk later, I mean, that had to be frustrating for you when you've had all these experiences. It's kind of blown your mind, if you will, in terms of your former beliefs. It had to be challenging when you started to enter into conversations, everyday conversations with people, because I'm sure you couldn't relate to a lot of the belief systems now.
Oh, yeah, it was very, it did completely. I was often misunderstood, but it was interesting that that I then became a cultural trainer. This was something that I started doing only after my near-death experience, and I'd never even realized that such a position ever existed. But somebody actually found me and recruited me, and they had heard me speaking or something or sharing about my experience, and they actually said, you would make a perfect cultural trainer because of your background. And so that's when I started becoming an intercultural consultant, which in fact I haven't had time to do in the last year since I
became I would imagine not. Yes.
Yeah.
On page 69 in your book, I loved your book, by the way, and I mean everything is circled and underlined. There's another quote I want to share. On page 69, you write, I was able to look at myself with fresh eyes, and I saw that I was a beautiful being of the universe. I understand that just the fact that I existed made me worthy of this tender regard rather than judgment. I didn't need to do anything specific. I deserved to be loved simply because I existed. Nothing more and nothing less. Wow. What a beautiful feeling that must have been to know that there was no need to worry about any of that.
Yeah, and I wished that I had always known that, and that's one of the reasons why I share my story. It's something that I wish everybody knew. I wish everybody knew that, because I think that this fear we have of not being good enough, and, you know, we don't allow ourselves to be who we are. We always feel we have to prove ourselves and compete, and it causes us to fight and act up. I think if we all realized that we are amazing and worthy of love, we'd all just be happy being who we are.
Do you find that when you talk to people in your lectures and such, that people are trying to find a formula, or they wish they had that near-death experience like you did? Do they bring that up with you?
Yes, a lot of people say that that they wish they had such an experience, or it would be easier if they had a near-death experience. And I say no, but I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
Well, of course.
What I had to go through, I wouldn't wish it on anyone. And I believe that it's something that anybody is capable of achieving. And really, it's not about going out and doing or having a formula or striving to get there. It's about stopping.
Yes.
Stop doing anything. It's about not doing anything, but it's about being. Because the minute we're in the state of doing, we're coming from the mind, and this is not a mind space. It's a heart space. It's a feeling place.
That's beautifully said. Not a mind space. It's a heart space. It's a joy. It's a joy to have Anita Morjan on today's program. She's the best-selling author of Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. We'll have much more of this compelling story right after this break. I'm Richard Brendon. You're listening to The Richard Brendon Show. Welcome back to the program. It's a joy to have Anita Morjon on today's program. I've loved her book. You will too if you haven't read it. It's called Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. I think it's chapter 8. You give an analogy, Anita, of a huge dark warehouse. I loved this analogy as it really put things in perspective. Can you retell this analogy for our listeners?
Sure. Now, if you imagine like the state of the near-death experience, well, actually, if you can imagine that life, when you're in physical life, imagine that you're in a dark space and all you have is a flashlight, a little flashlight.
Yeah.
And so you're navigating through life with just the beam of your little flashlight. And whatever you flash your light on is what you are aware that exists. But there's so much darkness there, but you can't see. You don't know what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine suddenly if somebody turns on these huge floodlights and suddenly the whole place is lit up. And when the whole place is lit up, you see, in fact, you see that the space around you is huge. It's like being inside a warehouse where you can't even see the ends. You can't see the walls, but what you see are shelves and shelves of just things that some things you've never seen before, some things you've seen because your flashlight has shone on it, but many, many things you've never even seen, you've never even known they've existed. All kinds of things with colors and lights and all kinds of things, and you can't even see the end. There's so many different things and then imagine even if the lights go back off and you're just living by the light of one flashlight again, just by the beam from one flashlight, and again all you can see is what the beam shines on, at least you're aware that there's so many things out there.
Mm.
There's so many things which even though you can't see them,
yes,
they do exist. And most people, we think that only what exists is what we can see, when in actuality, there's a lot more that exists that we can't see. And also, the other reason I use the analogy is to tell you that there's so many things that exist simultaneously.
Mm.
All those different things on all those shelves where you couldn't even see the end. And different people are flashing their light on different things at the same time. So their view of the world is very, very different from yours. It doesn't mean any one person is right or any one person is wrong. It just means that the possibilities are endless. And just because you haven't flashed your light on it yet doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
No. Yes, I love that. I love that. Something else that I was fascinated with is you also talk about having a choice as to whether you would stay or return to the physical realm. You clearly made the choice to return. Who was it that gave you the choice? How did you know you had a choice? And finally, what made you choose to return?
Okay, well, I felt it was my father who was communicating with me at that time, and I felt that I had the choice whether to come back into my physical body or to go onward into death. It was my father that said, this is as far as you can go. If you go further than this, you can't turn back. And he said, but it's not your time. And even though he said, it's not your time, you can go back, I felt that I still had a choice if I wanted to stay there and go onward into death.
Yeah.
At that time, my preference was to stay there because my body was dying. It was in such bad shape. I didn't want to come back into this body.
Yes. You had tumors all
not
over.
Only,
you had tumors all yes. over your body, yes.
Yes, I had tumors all over from the base of my skull all the way down to my abdomen. And open skin lesions and fluid in my lungs. And I was in really, really bad shape. And my organs had shut down. And I thought, what's the point of coming back into this body? Because even my family was suffering, taking care of me. And not just I was suffering, but they were suffering.
Yeah.
But then it was at that point that I understood completely, you know, why I had the cancer and I understood the magnificence and the truth. And that's when I realized that if I chose to go back into my body would heal very, very quickly, because now I knew why I had the cancer. And that's when it, you know, because there's no separation on that side, it was as though my father, my best friend, it was like as though together they were saying to me, okay, now that you know the truth of who you really are,
yeah,
go back and live your life fearlessly. And that was when I made the decision to come back.
Yeah, you actually talk about moving from a state of fear to a state of feeling invincible. Can you talk about that shift?
Yes, because prior to that, at least in physical life, I'd always lived in fear, fear of everything. I mean, fear of not being good enough, fear of being judged. Also, even any kind of treatment I chose for my illness, it was chosen from a place of fear, fear of illness rather than a love of life and a love of my body. So everything was chosen. Every choice I had made was made from a place of fear rather than a place of love. But in that moment, that choice to come back into my body was made from a place of love. It was made from a place of wanting, desiring to come back to express life again. And I knew, I felt invincible. And I knew that now with this decision, my body will be healed. It was like I knew it was already healed. And even when I came back, even though I was still really weak, I knew I was healed and my physical body just had to catch up.
Wow. We're bringing love to life today with Anita Morjana through her compelling story documented in her best-selling book, Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. We'll be right back after a short break.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Welcome back to the program. Talking to the author of Dying to Be Me, Anita Morjana, and what a compelling and inspiring story. Now, we talked in the previous segment about your moving from a state of fear to a state of feeling invincible. In that same chapter, you talk about the tests that were done on you when you regained consciousness, that the cancer, which had been so present in your body just the day before, was now gone, or quickly leaving your body. You even tell about how the doctors, ridden with disbelief, had multiple tests performed to prove that the cancer was still in your body. You even quote a doctor who said, just because we can't find the cancer doesn't mean it's not there. I can almost hear a doctor saying that. Talk about this experience, and what do you think caused the cancer to simply go away?
Well, when I was having the test, well, what happened is that 4 days after my coming out of the coma, the tumors had reduced by about 60 to 70%, just physically, just visibly to, and to the touch. And I was still really weak, so they were waiting for me to get a bit stronger before they did more invasive testing, like, you know, like biopsies and bone marrow biopsies and so on. So, but as they conducted each test, they found no trace of cancer, and they did a biopsy on my neck. And even though the radiologist said there was no, there wasn't even a lymph node large enough to suggest cancer, the oncologist still insisted that a biopsy be done because he said it's not possible that there's no cancer. not so quickly. He said cancer doesn't just disappear like that. It just doesn't happen.
Well, and to the degree that you had it, yes.
Yeah, and so they conducted the biopsy and they did the they also did the bone marrow biopsy and the lymph node biopsy and everything, and they couldn't find the cancer at all. They were in total disbelief about it, and they didn't even know what to put into my medical records. And so your question was, why do I believe that it happened?
Yes.
I believe that it was because, at least for me, in the most concise and simple term, it would be because my consciousness, for want of a better word, changed from being one of fear to one of love. And when I say that, I mean love of myself. It means that I had realized when I was in the other realm that one of the most important things that I can do is to love myself, and it's something that I had never done and never known to do. I had never known that it's acceptable to love yourself. I'd always thought that it was selfish. And when I was in the other realm, I would say that was hands down the biggest lesson that actually saved my life, was learning that the most important thing is to love myself. And when I speak about it and when I tell that to people, many people say that, but if you love yourself, isn't that selfish? Isn't that egotistical? On the contrary, I think that people who don't love themselves they overcompensate, maybe by coming across as being egotistical. They maybe come across as being selfish because they need other people to do things for them. I think when you love yourself, you allow yourself to be so filled with love that it makes you a much more joyful and generous person to be around, in fact.
Go ahead.
I was actually going to say that our planet doesn't suffer from too much self-love. It, in fact, suffers from too little.
In chapter 13, you state that we all have the capacity to heal ourselves as well as to facilitate the healing of others. What an important and empowering message to spread. Can you share a little bit about this capacity to heal ourselves?
I think the first step is to learn to love ourselves. That's the very, very first step, is to realize that we are lovable, worthy, deserving. I learned that I didn't need to be a doormat. I didn't need to make myself small to make others feel big. I didn't need to make all my decisions based on fear. I didn't need to do things because I worry about what other people think of me. And it's okay to do things because I want to. And once we start to love ourselves, we allow ourselves to make our choices from a place of joy. It's okay to do things that bring you joy every single day, you know, and that's what I do. I ask myself, what's fun? Now, if something doesn't bring me joy, I don't do it anymore. And I think that's actually one of the most healing things you can do. And even if someone has a diagnosis of cancer or is unwell, I tell them, do not obsess about your illness. You are not your illness. Imagine if you got a clean bill of health. Imagine if the doctor said to you today, right now, that you are completely cancer-free. How would you feel? Feel that feeling. What would you do? Go do that, whatever it is. And I think that we really need to focus on finding what brings us joy. Most people seem to be obsessed with illness and not with the good things like joy and health.
Yeah, it sounds like you're letting joy be your compass now in your life.
Yes, and and it creates such a different life. It really does. Like, you can choose whether you want fear to be your compass or if you want joy to be your compass. And it just creates, like, a hugely different life.
I was also blessed by what you said on page 139 about love. You say, when we know that we are love, We don't need to work at being loving towards others. Instead, we just have to be true to ourselves, and we become the instruments of loving energy, which touches everyone we come into contact with. And then you go on to say, realizing that I am love was the most important lesson I learned, allowing me to release all fear, and that's the key that saved my life. Wow, again, talk about the power of love.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, when we love, when we allow ourselves to love ourselves, many of us don't allow ourselves to do that. When we allow ourselves to do that, we realize that actually at our core, we are love. Many people are afraid to express who they truly are. We tend to we tend to suppress it, and we tend to think that, oh, I've got to curtail this and behave a certain way. We tend to think we have to improve ourselves and work on ourselves. We don't. We just have to express ourselves, because at our core, we are actually love. We really are, every single one of us.
Anita, you have a web address. Can you share that with our listeners so people can follow your work and also where you're going to be teaching around the world?
Sure. My web address is www.anitamorjani.com. That's AnitaMorjani.com. And all my events, upcoming events, are all posted on my website. And I also have a Facebook page, so which you can find that on my website. So you can follow me on Facebook, where I've also got all my events posted, where I'll be speaking.
Anita, you've honored me by being on today's program. Thank you so much for sharing your amazing story with us.
Thank you so much. That was fun. I really enjoyed that.
Here's another quote from Anita. She says, "Our only obligation to others, our only purpose, is to express our uniqueness and allow others to do the same." I'll share some closing thoughts, but first, here's a beautiful Tina Maliha song. It's taken from her album Shores of Avalon.
Climb any mountain, cross every sea. Do you find your way home to me? Climb any mountain, cross every sea. Do you find your way home to me? Our faith will be a lantern I hold in my hand to light your way across these desert lands. Our faith will be a lantern I hold in my hands to light your way across these desert lands. Oh, so climb any mountain, cross every sea. Do you find your way? You find your way home to me. I pray for love to guide you on the road you walk. Pray for love to lift you up to the place where you belong. And I pray for you to know, as long as I am in this world, you will never walk alone. So climb any mountain, cross every sea.
Our closing thoughts are Anita's, taken from her book, Dying to Be Me. She writes, "When we're true to ourselves, we become instruments of truth for the planet. Because we're all connected, we touch the lives of everyone around us, who then affect others. Our only obligation is to be the love we are and allow our answers to come from within in the way that's most appropriate for us. I can't stress enough how important it is to enjoy yourself and not take yourself or life too seriously. One of the biggest flaws with many traditional spiritual systems is that they often make us take life too seriously. Although you know that I abhor creating doctrines, if I ever had to create a set of tenets for a spiritual path to healing, number one on my list would be to make sure to laugh as often as possible throughout every single day, and preferably laugh at myself. This would be hands down over and above any form of prayer, meditation, chanting, or diet reform. Day-to-day problems never seem as big when viewed through a veil of humor and love. In this age of information technology, we're bombarded with news seemingly at the speed of light. We're living in an age of high stress and fear, and in the midst of trying to protect ourselves from everything we think is out there, we've forgotten to enjoy ourselves and to take care of what's inside. Our life is our prayer. It's our gift to this universe, and the memories we leave behind when we someday exit this world will be our legacy to our loved ones. So we owe it to ourselves and to everyone around us to be happy and to spread that joy around. If we can go through life armed with humor and the realization that we are love, we'll already be ahead of the game. Now, add a box of good chocolates into the mix, and we've really got a winning formula. I wish you joy as you realize your magnificence and express yourself fearlessly in the world." It was a joy to have Anita Marjani on today's program. Thank you for joining us today. Our website is richardbrendan.org. All shows are podcast on that site. And so for engineer Aaron Duvall and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.